aren't they the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guy on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that ass again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting a chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Oh, that felt good, didn't it? Didn't it?
It's a nice win.
Did it change anything for you?
Yes and no.
Okay.
Yes, because, I mean, they got a win on the road in a game that most people, including myself, maybe you as well, didn't think that they were going to win.
It was an eyebrow raiser.
It was nice.
Yeah.
But to me, it just kind of cements who they are in a nutshell. You look at a four-game road trip, and they went 2-2 with one really, really bad loss and one really nice win. And you beat Minnesota without Draymond and Kuminga and a couple of others in the end of a road trip in a game where, let's be fair about it, Minnesota didn't show up until the six-minute mark of the first quarter.
Well,
they were flat. They were listless. They had five turnovers in the first 5 minutes. Now, how many of those were generated by Warriors defense? Maybe a little bit. The Warriors came out, and they were the aggressor. They took it to them, and they built up a big lead. And as you mentioned, when you're up by 20 in the first quarter, it does not necessarily mean that you're always going to win or you're always going to blow the team out. And so the Warriors survived Minnesota's late rally. You know, I like horse racing, and it was a little bit like seeing a horse turn for home with a five-length lead, and you're thinking, all right, this one, and then here comes the eight horse on the outside, and you get all the way down to the wire, and you win by a nose, and it's like, whew, another couple of strides, and they lose that race.
Maybe. You're probably right. I thought the whole night, I'm like, they're probably still going to lose. They're up by 20. I'm like, probably still going to lose. Probably. They'll probably find a way to lose. I know that Ant's going to get hot. They're going to make their run. All that stuff. Minnesota's tough. They're at home. That's how the NBA works. It's why both of those teams lead the league in clutch games. Like, I felt the whole time like that was going to get close at the end. It did. Warriors have a little bit of a bugaboo in that spot. They pulled it out. Good for them. Sometimes we do overanalyze these things, though. Was Minnesota flat? Were the Warriors good? Did they have that dog in them? You want to know what they did last night? Some of their shots went in. That's really it. That's it. They shot 50% from three. 50% from three.
You should win when you do that.
Buddy Hield had basketballs that came out of his hands that went in the hoop.
Nice.
That changes things. Guess what they did from the free throw line? They shot the ball, and it went in. That's the only thing that changed.
Well, and when it didn't go in, and when GP2 missed the second of two, and Kevon slithered in and jumped his usual 3 inches off the floor and poop, tipped that thing back out, Warriors kept possession, and they had to foul again. So even when they missed a free throw, to your point, they were able to scramble and get an offensive rebound, keep possession, and avoid disaster.
I think both times. They only missed three free throws in the game. If memory serves, Wiggins missed both ends of a free throw trip. This was with many, many minutes still to go. And I think that the Warriors got the rebound and did something with it. And then obviously the GP2 one at the very end that Wiggins grabs the offensive rebound.
Yep.
And that turns into two more Steph free throws and the end of the game.
Kevon with the great tap out on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
What he does at 6'9 without really much of a vertical leap, and not to disrespect Kevon as an athlete because he's a pro basketball player, but the way he's able to do what he does without really getting that far off the ground, he's amazing, and that was an uncanny, athletically smart play where he just kind of does his Kevon thing and then swoop, just tips it back out to Wiggins, and then you win the game.
Just a fascinating night, not only because the Warriors won, but you think about everything that's been said on this radio station all week long about how it almost felt like a coordinated effort by Steve Kerr, Steph Curry, and Draymond Green to let the fans know that we're probably not going to win and we're probably not going to make a big trade. And whether those were the actual words out of their mouths, that's how a lot of people were feeling. And at minimum, that was the discussion point. I know I never thought it was a white flag. I don't think you really thought it was a white flag But it was something. It was something what was being said, and it was very, very clear on their minds last night that they wanted to say something a little bit different. Again, here is Steph Curry on ESPN after the game.
All the Twitter fingers who's got deals that we need to make can kind of just shut up a little bit and let us figure this thing out. Like, we know we can be competitive, and we showed, you know, that toughness tonight. Obviously, every team is trying to find ways to get better, and for us, we've been great for a very long time. This is just a unique year where we have to be able to stay relevant and give ourselves a chance and just have some life in a playoff series, and we have a whole lot of confidence that we can, you know, beat anybody. So, yeah. That's it.
That's
Did everybody hear that? And there was more, Dibs. That was on national TV.
Just on that, just that piece that hits me as I've listened to it now for the fifth time. What he said about stay relevant and be competitive in a playoff series. That to me speaks to everything that they're thinking about as far as what this season is. Stay relevant. Right now, 20-20 is a 10 seed. You're relevant. You're staying relevant at 20-20. We're almost exactly halfway through the season, and they're not great. They're not terrible. They are relevant. So stay relevant, and then be competitive in a playoff series.
That is
where they're setting the bar.
Of course. They're two games out of the 6 seed.
Right?
Like,
one game out of the 12 seed.
I mean,
or a half game,
right,
rather.
But you say stay relevant. What if I change the word? Stay present. Just... That's my thing.
Yeah, like, stay present, here. But you got to stay relevant. You can be present, but...
I mean for us.
Yeah.
Stay here. Stay here. It's January 16th, and they won last night.
You tell me to put away my Twitter fingers?
Well, you usually do.
Well, I got the...
You put away everybody else's Twitter fingers.
I got the trade machine.
Everybody.
Nope. Well, yeah.
No, but how...
A lot of mutes.
I'm not telling you not to have fun on the internet.
Yep.
I think that's what the internet's largely doing there.
Especially that beautiful trade machine.
Yeah,
it's really fun.
Yeah. Yeah. Does anybody have to look over at their significant other at night? And they're like, what are you looking at? I'm sorry, I had the trade machine open
exactly.
again.
Exactly.
Yeah, go have fun and shop.
Are you looking at naked girls again? No, honey, it's the trade machine.
It's the trade machine. The Warriors and Raptors are going to have a hard time figuring this out, huh? Just stay in the moment. You can have fun. I'm not telling anybody not to come up with a mock deal. We've all done it. But as far as this need to make them define who they're going to be, a trade team or not a trade team? Why do we have... That's my question today. What is that? Why do we have this need for them to declare? Grandy, I think you might even be one of these people based on the conversations we've had today. It feels to me like there are Warrior fans who have this need for the team to declare. As in, there's three choices. We're all in on Steph this year. We're all out on mortgaging the future, or there's team wait and see. And I have to be on team wait and see, because there's going to be new information every day, new deals every day, new contractual situations, new realities, new winning streaks, new losing streaks. I don't know, man. We're not there yet.
We've been on team wait and see for 2.5 years, and all we've learned is that they're not good enough, and they're only getting worse.
But
I don't know how you can keep saying, oh, well, we hope when the offseason comes along, maybe this is the year that Giannis is going to be available.
I'm not even talking about the offseason. I'm talking about 3 weeks from today. Like, do you know what I mean? I don't want to hear them say we're definitely making a deal. Not if it's a bad one. Not if it, like, don't do a deal just to do a deal. I hear a lot of people do anything for Steph. I might even agree with you. But what if that deal that you're making for Steph makes them worse? I argued this 2 weeks ago. Just from a salary standpoint, Jimmy Butler, right? Let's talk Jimmy Butler for a second. From a salary standpoint, that would be Wiggins and Kuminga. I don't think that makes you better. The concept is you're helping Steph. I think you're hurting Steph. So that's all. I don't understand this need to make the Warriors tell us exactly what they're going to do. You have to take every day and every deal on its own merits.
And then you have to take every result on its own merits, and you still have, I think, 7 or maybe even 8 games until the actual deadline. So if you're 20-28 or 28-20 or somewhere in between, that all will inform your course of action. Because if you happen to go on a little bit of a heater with this cast of characters and you find yourself in the 6 or 7 seed, you might be more motivated to make a move thinking, okay, we're starting to hum. We might be one player away. So now we can really look at the deadline and think about adding a piece that can get us from a 6 seed to the 3 or the 4 seed. And conversely, if you go on another skid and you find yourself in the 12 seed and you are, I don't know, 24-28 over the next 12 games, that might inform you the other way.
Totally, totally. And even if there's the record side of it, and then there's also just the availability, the financials, all of those things, that to me, you take each and every one on their own merits. Like, that's Mike Dunleavy's job. And I am in the camp that Mike Dunleavy, based on a very short period of time here as the GM, has done some pretty interesting things. I like Mike Dunleavy as the GM. Not everything is perfect. I think he was kind of stuck in the whole Jordan Poole situation. I think the Jordan Poole situation was about money more than people realize. It was about not just like, who's better, Jordan Poole, Chris Paul, trade exceptions, what are we going to do here? It was about, do we want to be paying that to Jordan Poole for the next 5 years? While we're also wanting to extend Steph, extend Draymond, and be ready for Jonathan Kuminga, that deal was more about flexibility. And there was the whole emotional side that was hanging over the organization, which is Draymond's fault, largely. But, you know, all of those things come into play when you figure out what to do next. So I'm just not going to, I as a fan don't want to pigeonhole the Warriors into you must do this.
Right.
You must make a deal or you must not make a deal. I don't know.
Well, you got 10 games, and I do think that they're still trying to decide who they are. And it's interesting the way Steph put it last night to tell everyone to just kind of back up a little bit and let us figure this out. And, you know, maybe the Warriors can figure it out because Buddy had a good game last night. And Dennis Schroeder played a lot closer to the Schroeder that you thought that he was going to be. He was getting the ball and going downhill. He was attacking the basket. And Buddy was shooting with confidence. And your younger pieces all came in and contributed. So if that's the team that you really are closely resembling, and Kuminga comes back, and Draymond comes back, well, now maybe you don't have to necessarily make a big move at the deadline, because that team last night looked more like the 12-3 team than the team that lost 17-24.
Fitzy's going to join us at 4:15. It's all you until then. 888-957-9570. What did last night's win do for you in terms of the way you're looking at this? Steph says, give us a minute. We want to figure this out. Are you willing to play it that way? Let's hear from Warrior fans. The door is wide open for you at 888-957-9570. We'll tell you about the knockout tournament coming up next. We're also sponsored by AC Transit, and this is Willard and Dibs.
Looney dribbles it out to Curry. Pump fake, fly by, three ball. Got it! Oh, the net barely even moved. Curry with a pure shot from the left corner, and he claps and pumps his fist. He knows it's not over, but that was a big time bucket by number 30.
Now back to Willard and Dibs. Take it away, Mark.
You got it, Steph. Hey, cheers, brother. Nice shot. Nice win.
Shoot your shot. It's all you got.
It's all you got. And nice comments after the game. Hang on a sec.
Yeah, 21 shots. So shoot your shots, S plural, 7 threes, and cash me out one time. Oof. On my Warriors Live Take It to the Bank prediction. I had Steph over 24.5.
Cash me out one time.
And I believe you as well, my brother.
Schroeder over 11.5 points.
Cash me out one time.
He scored 12 before he fouled out.
Question mark?
No, I hit an underdog play.
Attaboy.
Actually should share this story.
No, I forgot. I thought you were on the Buddy over 2.5
threes.
No, that
was the previous game.
Yeah,
that
so when Buddy hit his third, I was like, oh, look at my partner.
Yeah,
I forgot you had pivoted to the German.
Schroeder.
Nice.
And he was victorious as well. This happens sometimes. Remember these when you think you have bad luck in life. Things like this do happen. I hit one on Underdog last night. Schroeder, higher than 11.5 points.
Yep.
He scored 12, then fouled out.
Nice.
The other one I paired him with was Trey Murphy with the Pacers, who needed to be higher than 23.5 points. I'm literally watching the game. He's got 22 points. They're in the final 6 seconds of the game.
Ah, you're going to lose.
Close game.
Uh-huh.
The other team, I can't remember who the hell they played, had the ball.
Nice.
The other team's got the ball. They miss. Murphy gets the rebound and the foul because it was like a three-point game. So with 1.1 seconds, and again, I need higher than 23.5, he goes to the other end and whoosh, whoosh.
Both of them?
Both free throws.
Oh, nice.
2 half-point wins.
Cha-ching.
Cha-ching.
Nice.
Da-da-da-da-ding.
That's so good.
Yeah.
Those are fun.
So much fun.
So much more fun than the opposite. The bad beat. You got to remember good wins. And then, you know, next time you get a bad beat, you got to remember these good wins, you know?
Abe had one of those last night. He's screaming what he wants the Warriors to win, but he needed Gobert. And by the way, everyone in my family calls him the Headlock. That's from the lovely Christie. She gave him the nickname. He's the Headlock.
Le Headlock.
And he needed one more. So he's like yelling for the Warriors to win, but for Gobert to get one more rebound.
10.5 was the line.
And he did not get that rebound.
Yeah.
Stupid Gobert. Anyway.
It's a 5 for your Abe.
All right. 888-957-9570. We mentioned there was another Steph. I mean, there's a few things, but there's another comment in particular we wanted to let you hear. So he says on ESPN, right there courtside, hey, shut up. Shut up, Twitter. Let us figure this out. And then after the game, on local postgame, he had this to say, addressing anyone who was thinking white flag with regard to recent comments.
Anybody who thinks that I'm okay with just being on an average basketball team is insane. Take whatever I said, I still stand on it, but it doesn't mean that you're not in a situation where you're trying to get better, make appropriate moves that help you do that. Mike knows that. We've talked about it. That's the expectation for me, trying to help lead the team where we want to go. Again, that doesn't mean that you're reckless. What people's definition of that is where I was talking about the Twitter fingers thing, like trade machines are fun, but what does that actually look like? So we're going to handle our business. Mike's going to handle his, see where we end up.
So here's what I think has happened this week. And a boss of mine talked to me about this years ago and was actually talking about radio. But there is overlap between radio and Golden State Warriors basketball. It is all entertainment content creation. And so here was my thought about what the Warriors have done this week. Because I get it. If it sounds like they're like, we're not making a trade. We don't want to do something stupid. And everyone's like, it's a white flag. And now they're like, no. It's not a white flag. We're all in on right now. It's like, are you guys flip-floppers? What the Warriors are doing, in my mind, is they are managing the balance between hope and fear. And that's what you have to do. You have to manage the balance between hope and fear. And you've seen it literally just in the last 48 hours. You lose to the Raptors, and we all get filled with fear. Then you beat the Timberwolves, and we all get filled with hope. And the Warriors, they need to ride those emotions as well. They're feeling them. They know their fan base. They know their audience, as any good content creator does. They know exactly what everybody's thinking. That's why they take these comments to whether it's social media or press conferences or whatever. And that's why I'm on team wait and see what February 6th brings. There is so much more hope and fear and information that will come between now and then. And no matter what happens, I will never be in favor of them doing something stupid just because they feel compelled to do something. Because so many people want them to.
They will never feel that, I don't believe, as long as they have, you know, Steph there and Joe Lacob there. They're not going to be a team that does something reckless. And you heard Steph and Steve Kerr both talk about that. So in terms of what they might do in 3 weeks, I do think a lot of it's predicated on the next 10 games. You have 10 more games before February 6th, which is when the deadline is, and you play at LA that night. And you've got 8 home games and 2 road games in the next 10.
That's good.
And if you look at those opponents, you've got Boston and OKC. And other than that, there are winnable games. And as we saw from the last 2 games, a game that's winnable is losable, and a game that's losable is also winnable. So you can't really look at any of the next 10 and think, oh, I got them at 7-3. Well, they could be, but they can also beat Boston, and then they could lose to Washington and turn around and beat Boston, because that's who this team is. So, yeah, the balance between hope and fear, it's real, and it's the same no matter what team you cover. And right now at 20-20, it's a pretty good balance, because you're hopeful that they can still be a playoff team, but you're fearful that your older players might miss more games and Kuminga might not come back, and you're hopeful they can bring somebody in, but you're fearful they might have to trade Kuminga. So there's a ton of hope and fear that have already been there and that also exists over the next couple of weeks.
So what do y'all think of what Steph Curry said? What did last night do for you with regard to your outlook, your hopes, your fears? 888-957-9570. Let's take some calls. Let's go to Irv in Berkeley. Hi, Irv. Thanks for the call.
Hey, how you doing?
What's going on?
What's up, Irv?
Hey, I just have a problem with Kerr and not being able to get or try to trade for a big man. I think it's easier to trade for a big man than it is, like, I keep hearing Jimmy Butler and Cam Johnson. And those guys are not going to help the Warriors. They need a guy like Vucevic. The guy that's in Chicago.
Nikola Vucevic, yes.
Yeah, or the guy that's in Washington.
You're talking about Valanciunas.
Yeah, when they play against big teams that, like Looney, he just doesn't have the size. He can do all he wants, but he just doesn't have the size against those big teams.
I'm interested in adding a big guy too, but Irv, did you, like, you started the conversation by saying you had a problem with Kerr. What does he have to do with acquiring a big guy?
Every big guy that he's had, he's either traded him, cut him, but he doesn't coach him up. And I look at a lot of centers around. We don't need the guy that's in Denver, nor Anthony Davis. We just need somebody that can block shots or change a shot and be a lob threat.
It's interesting. Irv, thanks. Really appreciate it. First of all, Kerr is not in charge of trading and cutting. That he's the head coach. He's not the general manager. I'm not going to say he doesn't have input. But the idea that he's never coached up the bigs, I don't know. Like, I mean, if we want to go back for the whole Kerr era, I think they've made wonderful use of their bigs. If we want to go back to Andrew Bogut and then kind of who Kerr referenced when you and I had him on earlier this week talking about even guys like Otto Porter, and maybe that's not who people think of as a big, but he's like a stretch four type of a guy. Listen, I would love for them to acquire the right stretch five if it works, but I don't want them necessarily to have to give up a first-round pick to do it, and I don't think it really... I don't think it's a Steve Kerr thing. I think it's an organizational thing.
Well, the idea of coaching him up, like you could look at Andrew Bogut, who came in as the player he already was, and he fit great because he was an elite passer. JaVale McGee, when he came here, JaVale McGee was as good as he's ever been. Same thing with Maurice Spates. Does Steve get credit for coaching them up? James Wiseman came here, and Steve maybe didn't coach him up, but Wiseman has gone on to not do much elsewhere, and now he's hurt with a torn Achilles. His career might be in real jeopardy in the NBA. So the idea of coaching up a big man, it felt like, you know, Bielitsa was a good fit. And then last year the guy they had didn't really fit. The guy who ended up going to the bench for the remainder of the game.
Saric.
Thank you. The other big
Dario
white
Saric.
Euro. Dario Saric. I mean, did he not coach up Saric? Or was Saric not really that good?
Saric had the same start here as Buddy Hield did.
Kind like, of, yeah. Like a to month a in, extent,
we're
like, right.
We're digging this dude.
Yeah.
And then it was like, not digging the dude anymore.
And so the idea of coaching up a big, you need to have the right big man in here. And, you know, the one guy I'm really interested in, and we're not going to see him until the Warriors are really out of it, and that's Quentin Post. Because yeah. You look at the G League, and he's lighting up the G League, and he could be, eventually, the stretch five that everybody's clamoring for.
Eventually, yes, but I'm certainly not. That's one thing I would reject that we do hear from callers and conversations, which is, let's start playing even more young players.
No.
And when I say young players, I'm not talking about Moses Moody. I'm talking about somebody who was just drafted
right.
in the second round earlier this year. Like, no. Like we're not turning them over to brand new players who've never played in the NBA. Here's one thing. This might be a small thing, but it does cross my mind. When you look at two teams last night who lead the league in clutch games, and you can think clutch game stat is stupid or whatever, and for those of you who don't know what it is, it means that the game within the final 5 minutes is within 5 points, okay? And the Warriors and Timberwolves play the most of those games more than anybody else in the whole league. On some level, doesn't that say to you that the space between what we're looking at with the Warriors now and being an actual good playoff team is not that large? I'm not talking about championship contention. But if we can all agree that the Warriors are, as Steve Kerr said last night, competitive, and they're right there in almost all of their games, but what that doesn't look like they do very well is have scores at the finish. Well, could there be tweaks, acquisitions, whatever, that change that a little bit, and the Warriors go from a 500 team to a 580 team in the second half of the year? Like, they're not far off.
I get what you're saying, but
there's something there.
I get it, but two things. One, I do think that the clutch game stat is kind of a joke. Because, you know, being within five with 5 minutes left, you can still lose by 16.
Right, but it's a close game. Like, you haven't been blown off the floor.
But the majority of the games the Warriors have played have been that. And the majority of the games in the association, at least half the games, by and large, it's about, I would say, 40% of all games are clutch games. And you look at the Warriors, and they are 20-20. And in clutch games, they're 12-13. So in games that aren't clutch, they're 8-7. That means eight times they've won games that probably were comfortable blowouts, and you could look at their game log, and you could look at a bunch of games that were blowouts. They opened up with a 36-point win over Portland. They beat Utah by 41. They lost to, was it Memphis, by 53?
Yeah, that one was out of hand.
Yeah, by 51.
Right.
So a lot of the games, you know, that are clutch games, I do think they ultimately become a reflection of who you are in general.
No, they do, but I, like, to me, when you lead the league in that category, and the Warriors have 25 such games, and that does only trail the Wolves at 26, and then you look at the Washington Wizards, who have 11, like not even half as many, and maybe that's too low of a bar to just compare them to the Washington Wizards. But there's something there to say they're right there in almost every basketball game. Because, by the way, in those 25 games, those clutch games that the Warriors have played, they've only won 12 of them, and they've won 20 games. So that means eight times they beat somebody maybe kind of going away.
Right.
And then in the rest of, so that's eight games.
But that's my point about the stat, is that I do think that these records in clutch games are usually reflective of what your overall record is. Minnesota's 12-14 in clutch games, and on the year, they're 21-19. So they're 9-5 in non-clutch games. Slightly better in non-clutch, but their record is still somewhat reflective of what they are in clutch games.
No, I don't disagree with you, although, for instance, the Detroit Pistons have the seventh best record, and I know they've gotten a lot better this year, but you're largely right. The top three teams in clutch games are the Cavs, Thunders, and Celtics. They're the best teams in the league. But that point, I think, remains, which is that if there is something, and this is what they were trying to do, I think, by acquiring Schroeder, if there's something that you can do in the final 5 minutes of the game to become a more dynamic team, then you're not that far away from, again, going from a 500 team to whether that is the 6 seed, the 5 seed, I'm not saying the 1 seed or the 2 seed, but they're not that far off from being the competitive basketball team that we're all hoping they have for us here in the second half of the year.
Yeah, and that's what Steph was saying last night. He said, you know, back off the Twitter fingers and let us figure it out. And he just wants to be relevant and get into a playoff series and be competitive. And yes, they can be that. They can do that. And last night, I do think, was a big step toward that, because for me, there's a gulf not only from a standings perspective, but also emotionally. There's a big difference between 19 and 21 and 20 and 20. The fact that you beat Minnesota to get to 20 and 20, to get to the 10 spot, to go 2-2 on the trip, it must have given them a big shot of confidence. And I know that fans are certainly feeling a lot different about this team, as opposed to if you laid an egg in Toronto and then you gacked a 24-point lead against Minnesota. If you somehow found a way to lose that one and you dipped a 19 and 21, we'd be having a whole different conversation today, even though it's only just one game.
Indeed. Here is the conversation we're having. It's centered around these comments from Steph Curry on the floor to ESPN right after the game.
All the Twitter fingers who's got deals that we need to make can kind of just shut up a little bit and let us figure this thing out. Like, we know we can be competitive. And we showed, you know, that toughness tonight. Obviously, every team is trying to find ways to get better. And for us, we've been great for a very long time. This is just a unique year where we have to be able to stay relevant and give ourselves a chance and just have some life in a playoff series. And we have a whole lot of confidence that we can, you know, beat anybody. So, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the two things that stand out to me right there at the end where he really emphasizes we have a whole lot of confidence that we can beat anybody. But even prior to that, when he's like, shut up and let us figure this out, as opposed to what we do hear from stars, at least behind the scenes in the NBA, which is get me help, or get me out of here. Steph Curry, I hope there's an appreciation in this conversation, and I know that Steph is usually pretty damn appreciated by Warriors fans, but I hope there's an appreciation for what he's saying here, which is that, A, there's a responsibility because I'm a Warrior. I don't want the Warriors to do bad things for the Warriors. But the flip side of that is I'm not sitting here demanding a move. I'm not pouting. I'm not complaining. I want to get in the lab with my guys and see if we can figure this out. That's the stuff that you don't hear from NBA stars very often. So once again, you know, and I said it earlier this week, party of one when it comes to this
guy. Right. And here you are with, 40 down and 42 to go. And yeah, he wants to get in the lab and, quote, figure it out. And he should be given every chance to do that. And if you look at what that means, it means Draymond's back and his flu-like symptoms or whatever kept him out of the game. And the reports yesterday were that he was, you know, ashen and gray and sickly. And so you hope he comes back soon. And, you know, Jonathan Kuminga, when we talked about the injury and a reevaluation in 3 weeks, that should be coming up in the next week. Bob Fitzgerald today at 4:15 maybe can shed more light on what he's hearing about just at least a reevaluation. But if Draymond can get healthy and Kuminga can come back, then you can really start to see what this team that Steph is talking about looks like again.
Let's go to Trevor in Roanoke Park. Hey, Trevor, thanks for calling. What are you doing?
Hey, what's up, guys? How are you?
What's up?
Good. Well, so a little thought about what Curry said last night, and I think what's going on with the organization in general is what team are you going to get? It is very difficult when you're a team that's 20-20 and very average and trying to understand which way you're going to go. So when you look at, are they going to make a move for somebody? Who is that guy? Is it going to be a center like Nikola from the Bulls, or is it going to be somebody else? Do they go get a shooter? It's hard to say because you have a guy like Buddy Hield who went off for 18 points last night, but is very up and down. You get the consistency is what I think they're looking for. So I think when you hear Curry say that, I think they're just in a mode of they got players that can go and make a run on the team now if they play to their potential. Are they going to do that? I think that's the magic question of, like, who do you move if you're going to move somebody, and who is that for? Because any one of these guys, if they just kind of pick it up a little bit, pick up the slack, you got a team, like you said, they're very close. You got a team that can start stringing together wins.
Well, and so, Trevor, yeah, Trevor, thank you so much. I want, like, to your point, this has gotten lost in what happened last night. There was no Kuminga. No Draymond.
Nope.
There's no Pajemski. And there was no Slo-Mo, who is kind of a gluey rotational guy, at least in some matchups. And they went against one of the biggest, baddest front lines in the entire NBA. Gobert, whatever you think about Julius Randle, he's big body.
Yeah.
Naz Reid, I think, is a phenomenal basketball player off the bench for them. They went up against that group down four players. Minnesota was down no one. They were at home and at full strength. So don't forget that acquisition. The first week of February. His name is Jonathan Kuminga.
And also think about last night and a big reason why they won. Two of the reasons are two of the most prime trade targets, and that's GP2 and Kevon Looney. Two guys who stepped in and did the little things and played great. And any trade you want to make probably involves one, if not both of them.
That is exactly right. Unless you're talking about something at a higher level, the
right.
Wiggins and Kuminga type names. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. What is your reaction to what Steph said? Stop tweeting and ESPN trade machining. Shut up and let them work. They still think they've got something. Is this a little too flimsy back and forth for you this week? We're taking your calls at 888-957-9570. Bob Fitzgerald joins us in just over an hour. We're also sponsored by Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Safe travel in the new year starts at Valvoline Instant Oil Change, your 15-minute drive-through oil change for all vehicle types. Friendly technicians will check fluids, wipers, lights, and more. No need to get out of your vehicle locations and coupons at BayAreaOilChange.com. This is Willard and Dibs.